So in a very strange scheduling mishap and irony, it is Father's Day, but we're not talking about fathers at all. This is more of a mother or potential or mother avoidant episode, I guess.
The episode of irony.
As usual, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me today is Eileen.
Hello.
Hello. And Bob.
Hi.
And we're only with you for the first segment. This is going to sort of another special episode of Ask an Atheist. Where
tag team.
Yeah. We're discussing the other A word.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. We've had an open discussion about abortion for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and we've gotten some emails and some commentary, and we're here to talk about it today. And in the first segment, there's me, Bob, and Eileen. We're going to take it from sort of a medical point of view and a morality point of view, and just sort of get this conversation started. And we're going to start with an email. And this comes to us from Cranky Humanist from the Bay Area. Hey guys, I stumbled across a secular pro-life website recently. I have yet to see them address the question of when a fetus goes from something that is not a person to something that is. So, Bob, how would you address that?
The thing to keep in mind here, I think, is the idea of a spectrum. If you imagine a spectrum between green and blue, we can argue about where the line is, but the point is that green is not blue. Very, very different things here. And that, I think, is what we have with the personhood of a being.
Right.
I think the word person here is very appropriate. In the same way that an acorn is not a tree and a water molecule is not a water, not a whirlpool, a single fertilized human egg is not a 1 trillion cell baby.
Right, right.
Agreed. And I actually made fun of Bob earlier for scratching his arm and saying that he killed a bunch of cells, and now that they were laying dead or dying,
screaming,
help me, help me.
Well, there's our opinion just, right there.
And I just didn't care. That's just how I roll.
So you're here kind of as a medical professional.
Yes, I get to be a nurse today.
How would you approach that?
So my approach is that I'm in agreement with Bob that a group of cells, whether they be a single cell organism, 2 cells, 3 cells, 4 cells, is not a person.
Right.
And that's kind of where I draw the line. And I could go in on this topic for hours about neonatal and fetuses and embryos and the stages of development, so on and so forth.
And there's sort of as Bob said earlier, a spectrum here, and that's sort of a pothole conversation, isn't it? It can sort of be a trap, can it?
It can.
It can be. And one trick that I not trick, but more of a game that I see that pro-lifers often play is they'll say, okay, well, it's got to be a human all the way along because it's Homo sapiens. It's not a sponge. It's not a zebra.
Right.
Okay, fine. Well, let's call it a person. Say, no, a person is a synonym for human. And I really don't care. Call the spectrum what you will, but let's just agree there is a spectrum. Now, one area, again, that I think we're going to agree, pro-choice and pro-lifers, there's a group called PETA, an animal rights group. They have a slogan, a rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy.
Okay.
Now, what they're saying here is vermin is the same thing as livestock, is the same thing as pets, is the same thing as people. Now, I think most of us would just laugh at that. That, I mean, I see where they're going. They're trying to say that all animals are the same. Okay, fine. I'm sorry. It just does not play. A rat is not the same thing as a human.
Yeah.
Now we reject that collapsing of the spectrum. That's the game that pro-lifers play. They call it a baby from single-cell standpoint.
Right. And most people who don't have a very specific dog in this fight wouldn't say that it begins on day zero, as you put it. That it begins sometime after day zero.
Exactly, and so many pro-lifers insist on day zero. That's where they're from their standpoint obliged to go.
Or day minus seven, and actually consider that a woman having a period is the equivalent of her having and aborting a baby.
There are people who
what.
I've heard that as a joke. There are people who actually consider that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There are.
taking the potential idea to an extreme, you know, the twinkle in dad's eye.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that is just not a baby.
Well, agreed. Well, I agree. I definitely agree on that point. However, we have another email. This is Justin from New York, and he says, in the spirit of brevity, I will break my argument down into its basic points. And we'll take them one at a time, and we'll respond to them individually. And the first one is, when two adults enter into consensual sex, they are aware that a pregnancy could result from the encounter.
No, I'll just jump in on that. I mean, I certainly agree, let's demand adult behavior. Right. You know, if you have an adult body, you need to behave yourself. At the same time, when someone shoots himself by playing with his gun or cleaning it or whatever, we don't just, at the emergency room, we don't just say, hey, I'm sorry, you're an adult, you knew what was going to happen, leave.
Oh, too bad. You shot yourself in the foot.
We look at this from a harm reduction standpoint. The guy was an idiot. Granted, we still patch him up. We still take care of him. Now, if you have two 17-year-olds, one thing led to another. My first question is, what about sex education?
Exactly.
Now, right. Were these kids taught proper sex education? If not, there's the problem. Let's go back and fix that. But at the same time, they're pregnant. What is the best approach for them and for society?
Right. So the second one, as a humanist, I believe strongly that every life is inherently precious and equally deserving of the right to life. I'll just come out right and say, like, so a dog barf slime mold is precious?
Ew.
and it gets to the point that Eileen mentioned, that you scratch skin cells off your body.
Yeah.
And let's imagine 20 years, those are going to be clonable into not just another person, but another me. I rather fancy, you know, me.
Right.
And yet, who cares? I mean, that single cells, everyone agrees, just not a big deal. This idea that potential is the same thing as person just collapses when you think about it.
Right.
Yeah. And in a germophobic society where everything from soaps to hand cleansers are meant to kill single-celled organisms, that, I mean, okay, yeah, they're life, but they're not people.
Clearly, there's a line.
There's definitely a line.
And the line is beyond whether or not something is alive.
Absolutely.
Okay. Third point. From a biological standpoint, every egg and sperm combination is unique. Eileen, I think you have something to say. Very clear to
say. Yeah, so every egg and sperm combination is unique. Okay, that's, yes, that's DNA being shared between two people and possibly creating something, but I have a problem with using that particular scenario as something that means that I need to move forward and have a baby.
Right.
Because there are so many more implications than just having, oh, great, I'm sharing DNA with someone, and, okay, potentially this could become a fetus, so on and so forth. But there are a lot more decisions that people need to make that are much bigger than, okay, I'm joining my DNA with someone.
Yeah. Every pattern of measles is also unique.
Exactly.
and again, not every egg and sperm combination becomes a fetus.
Right.
Whether or not there's abortion.
Exactly. And for example, molar pregnancies. Molar pregnancies are not viable pregnancies. They are just a mass of cells that could potentially kill the mom. And your body thinks that they're a pregnancy, but they are not a pregnancy. And you are expected to get rid of
them.
And
there's certain circumstances under which... I mean, there's a viability circumstance here with medicine. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. And so the American College of... American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is one of the governing bodies of professionals for obstetrics and gynecology in the country and actually throughout the world. And they put forth a whole bunch of... basically policies and standards of practice that are grounded in evidence-based medicine. And they establish these policies for the safety of the patient and to facilitate good communication and good education with the patients. The other piece is that they are also involved with the American Academy of Pediatrics, who also on the pediatric side does the same thing.
Right.
The American Academy of Pediatrics, we have the neonatal resuscitation program. There are strict guidelines in place about processes and policies regarding neonatal resuscitation. And there are actually four criteria that if the fetus or baby meet, that neonatal resuscitation can actually be withheld.
Okay.
Because if the fetus is non-viable, if it weighs a certain number of grams, which is less than 400, if it's not born with a brain, which is called anencephaly, or if it's born with a chromosomal abnormality that is not compatible with life, it is okay to actually withhold resuscitation.
So the medical profession already has this line regardless of abortion.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So the next point is, as a humanist, I believe that the more fragile a life is, that the more it needs protection.
This gets back, from my standpoint, to the spectrum argument, and doesn't hold from my standpoint. One argument that I have heard in chatting with Christians about this is in the progression going from a single cell to a newborn. They'll say, well, okay, fine. Well, from a newborn to an adult, there's a lot of progression there. I mean, I evolved quite a bit. Not evolved, but I grew. I developed quite a bit. And yet, the baby and the adult both have arms and legs, liver, skin, heart, you know, all these organs all put together. Yes, there's development, but the difference between a newborn and an adult is trivial. Seriously, it is trivial compared to the difference between a single cell and a newborn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just absolutely no comparison. We're talking 1 trillion cells put together in a very precise way.
And, you know, I hate to go sort of the cheeky route, but asparagus is very fragile and very hard to grow. And I eat it with relish, sometimes literally. But
you animal.
I know. But that's kind of the thing is life, we have to consume life in order to continue living. So not every, there's different values of sacredness to life. And
there is. I mean yeah. you could look at frog tadpoles in the water. They're tiny. They're fragile and so on. They're frogs. You know. I'm sorry. They don't rank very highly in the spectrum with people.
And perhaps sacred was not the right word he used. Precious. Never mind. Moving on. From a biological standpoint, every embryo is a growing entity with the potential to become a viable life. Okay.
Again, potential. It does have the potential. You may know of the Duggar family, very famous for their 19 and counting,
right?
19 and counting TV show. Yeah, potential. What just drives me nuts about this Quiverful movement, which they're a embodiment of, is the idea we're going to let God decide how many children we're going to have, which is, from my standpoint, the same thing as I'm going to drink a big bottle of poison. I'm going to let God decide if I die or not. No, you took a step. I'm going to go to a bank and wave a gun and let God decide whether I get arrested or not. No, if you have unprotected sex, you're deciding to have lots of kids. God's got nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. There's another thing going on, and that's sort of the it's being called in women, you know, the feminist circles and in the atheist circles, sort of the war on women.
Yes.
In this particular election cycle.
Indeed.
And the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists recently released this statement, which we're going to talk about a little bit. As physicians for women's health care, OBGYNs see firsthand the havoc that punitive ideology-based laws have on the health of women and their families. These ill-conceived laws are based only on the pretext of protecting health. Mandating that women be forced to undergo transvaginal ultrasound or any other medical procedure against their will and against their physician's judgment is an outrageous violation of patient autonomy and the confidential doctor-patient relationship. Decreasing access to family planning and contraception services will only increase unintended pregnancies and negatively impact family and societal health. So, okay, transvaginal ultrasound. Can we get a radio-safe definition of that real quick?
Yeah. trying to word this very carefully. So essentially a woman, when she gets a transvaginal ultrasound, the vaginal probe gets inserted to scan the inside of her cervix, uterus, so on and so forth.
Right.
It is an invasive procedure. It is not the medical standard of practice. There is no foundation in evidence-based medicine, and really it's being used as a scare tactic to scare women out of having this procedure done.
But after all, since men going to get Viagra always have to get a prostate exam, I think it's just totally fair.
So, okay, sure.
You go to the pharmacist and the pharmacist says, "I'm sorry, sir, you're just going to have to bend over and drop your pants." That it's fair.
Ask an atheist. 253-584-1480. Yeah, this is it. They're asking, so it's an invasive procedure, and it's being mandated on a political level, not on a medical level.
No.
There's no medical reason to have this procedure almost 100% of the time.
None whatsoever. And okay. It seems like the political platform that these politicians are taking is one on religion. And unfortunately, they're using that religious opinion and what they call evidence as their reason for declaring all of these new laws.
And I love the last line of this thing.
Yes.
Eileen, do you want to read that?
I would proudly read this. So ACOG says, "Our message to politicians is unequivocal. Get out of our exam rooms."
Indeed.
Let the doctors do the doctoring. Thank you very much.
Yes,
I love that.
And I mean, the doctors are the ones that establish trust with these patients and protect their patients.
Yeah,
the government is not doing that.
Now, indeed. In some of these emails, we've gotten a few myths, you know, or a few ideas posted to us that are kind of myths, and let's dispel some of those right now.
Great.
First, abortion is not more dangerous than carrying to term.
No, and in fact, abortion is a very safe procedure. All of procedures that are done within the hospital setting or within the clinic setting are done with informed consent by the patient. So in other words, the physician describes the procedure, goes through all of the risks. The risk of injury to mom or death from abortion is very minimal. It is actually more dangerous for mom to carry a baby to full term. The risk of postpartum hemorrhage and other complications from delivering a full-term pregnancy are much, much higher. better.
It would simply make sense. I mean, the baby just gets bigger and bigger. The risk has got to get bigger and bigger.
Indeed. The next one is that abortion does not cause cancer.
No. And so doing an abortion just means removing the tissue that is currently there that would not otherwise be there if you weren't pregnant.
Yeah.
It does not cause cancer. It does not cause the abnormal growth of cells. That just does not happen.
Where did this even come from? I mean, is it just completely again, made up out of nothing?
I feel like it's another scare tactic.
The big C is the big scary. So
absolutely.
Let's bring that specter up.
Yep.
Another one is abortion does not affect future fertility.
It does not.
Just the end.
It just does not. No. So just because you have an abortion doesn't mean that your body won't be able to, you won't be able to ovulate. It doesn't prevent you from ovulation. It doesn't prevent your uterus from holding on to a pregnancy. If there is a pregnancy to maintain, that is not the case.
Now, this last one kind of surprised me, but it makes sense given what you've already said, and that serial pregnancy is actually worse than serial abortion.
So I'm going to use Mom Duggar as my example again.
Of course.
Because she's just so out there. So she's had multiple pregnancies. She's had 20 at this point. At one point had a miscarriage, and her last baby that was delivered was a preterm pregnancy, a preterm delivery, and her baby has deficits now. And that's because her uterus was so overused and so stretched out and was not able to maintain the pregnancy until the end that the baby, unfortunately, was delivered preterm and now has deficits.
So where's the morality in that, I guess, would my question be?
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's again, just the idea that as the baby gets bigger, it becomes more of a risk on all counts.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then there's sort of the Christian assertion here, and now we're going to get to the religious bits, that saving embryos, you know, about embryos being very sacred versus other things.
I think that Christians themselves, if you ask them, they will undercut their own argument. There's a simple thought experiment that comes to mind for me. If you imagine the fertility clinic is on fire, again, silly experiment, but just go with me. In one room is a 5-year-old, and in another room there are 10 frozen embryos, and you can save just one. Which would you save? And everyone is going to go save the child.
Right.
Okay, now let's imagine the same situation 2 years later. Now you have a 7-year-old, and the embryos have been turned into babies. Now they're 10 1-year-old babies. Now which one would you save? And obviously you're going to say that the 10 kids, and yet in the first situation you're going to be, you know, get the Medal of Honor, second situation, somebody died. Terrible situation.
Right. I can hear mind stretching in the background there. I can hear people going, no, I would go for the embryos. There are people who are really going to try that. And so what are the other things that
yeah, one of the thought experiment comes to mind, and I just encourage pro-lifers to run give this some thought, is they're always going for showing some sort of late-term abortion, having a picture on a poster. Now, their claim is it's a baby from day one. So why not have that single cell, that single fertilized human egg cell? Show that instead. You know, walk the walk. Show us that Plan B is just the same as an abortion.
Indeed. So that was...
And it's not...
It's not. That's true.
It's definitely not.
It's what is it again?
Plan B is a medication that is the same as a large dose of birth control pills, and it essentially prevents ovulation. It does not prevent.
It's not an abort effect.
Right? No, it does not. It does not.
Doesn't kill
abort
anything.
The baby. It doesn't kill the baby. Nothing.
And with those facts, we're going to go into the break. This is Ask an Atheist. Eileen and Bob and myself are going to be taking a break, and when we come back, it's going to be Mike, Deanna, and Libby, who we haven't heard from in a while.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no-cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Dawn Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal! Here you go!
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
So we're into segment two with our new group of people. I'm Mike Gillis. Joining me in the studio, Deanna Joy Lyons.
Howdy.
And Libby Grant.
Hi, remember me?
You are listening to Ask an Atheist 253-584-1480. We're into the second segment about the other A word, abortion. Before we get started on this, I think it's really important to toss out a disclaimer. It's important that you understand that we are not making a blanket statement about every single person who opposes legalized abortion. That would be silly. That would be unfair. But I also want to say that the wide brush you might feel during this segment is wide for a reason, because the pro-life movement, at almost every level, we're talking about politicians who espouse the views. We're talking about activists who are pushing for laws in the state legislature. And even the folks standing outside of clinics with signs generally fall into this category and seem to almost without exception. So I guess let's get started, because a couple months ago we tossed out an open question. Can you find a rational, justified argument for making abortion illegal that doesn't, when you dig down deep under all the equivocations, under all the bad science, under all the red herrings, that you won't find religious ideology at the bottom of it? What do you guys think?
Nope.
I don't think there is. You know, I've tried to think about this subject for a long time, and, you know, I've been for abortion and abortion rights for pretty much since before my first abortion, and I can't find any reasons. I talk to people, I've argued with people, and it's always about the baby. The potential baby is a special, unique creature endowed with a soul at the moment of conception by their God, and that is why we cannot have abortion, because that unique little soul would go away. You can oppose it for, you know, oh my God, you're not letting a potential life live. But when you, you know, look at the science that opposes that, you're still not looking at a unique, special, magical, souled creature anymore.
Right. I think the baby that you mentioned is really the key point in all this. I don't think it's so much that religious groups or people who purport to be anti-abortion are so much anti-abortion. I think it's that they just want people to have as many babies as they possibly can. I think that's actually a feature that's built into religion, that successful religions that stand the test of time and end up having a lot of followers actually have this pro having babies, large families, no contraception feature as a feature that kind of helps carry them forward into the future.
Yeah, it seems like that's what we kind of get down to, is there's other factors being thrown in here that for all the talk that we get from these people, they're here to protect life. They're here to prevent these abortions. That doesn't seem to be the way that they act. That doesn't seem to be the way that they push, because if these were people that their primary motivation was preventing abortions from happening in the first place, it doesn't seem like that's the way they do it.
No, if they wanted to prevent abortions from happening in the first place, they would be the biggest proponents of, number one, Planned Parenthood and similar organizations that make birth control and education free and or cheap and easy for anybody to obtain, and B, of comprehensive sex education. And they're not. They oppose both those things very strictly, and that's because they want people to get knocked up. They want everyone to have babies.
Yeah, it is even just that they oppose places like Planned Parenthood, which I will say before, it's going to prevent more abortions than any fire and brimstone preacher
totally.
Out there, just through peer prevention. But it just feels like they don't just want to oppose these things. They want to defund them.
Yes.
They want to put them out of business. They want to make their activities illegal.
They want them to go away.
They want to spread horrible lies about them.
Yes.
And when you look at something like Planned Parenthood, abortions are really only a small percentage of the things that they actually do.
A tiny percentage.
3%.
Yes.
I mean, what do they do? They do STD testing.
They do cancer screenings. They actually do general wellness exams for men, women, and children. So if you don't have insurance and you need to figure out why you have a cold, why your ear infection won't go away, why your kid has a fever, you can take in Planned Parenthood. The physicians there will treat you for free or cheap. They provide birth control. They provide condoms for free. They provide all sorts of education about sexual matters of any kind, not just disease and prevention of disease, but sexual counseling, counseling for rape victims, all kinds of stuff like that.
Oh, and prenatal care for pregnant women. They actually will help a pregnant woman continue her pregnancy if that's what she wants to do.
So when you look at a lot of these pro-life websites, when they call it the abortion industry, and they're throwing it out there as if these people are making a buck, it seems like they do more to prevent that from happening than anything, including women who want to carry the baby to term and helping them do that in a healthy way. And
absolutely.
It seems like oftentimes this is the best bet for somebody who doesn't necessarily have the money or the insurance to be able to do this.
Certainly seems like it to me.
So, I mean, even I've used Planned Parenthood before. Clearly, I didn't go there to have an abortion.
Are you sure?
Unless you're not telling us something.
It's not like, you know, I was abducted by aliens. No. I've gotten free condoms there.
Yeah,
I've gotten STD screenings there as part of being a responsible adult.
Yeah.
So, I don't understand why. Let's put this all out on the table. Let's just throw it out there.
Okay.
For all their talk about wanting to prevent abortions, and they don't support comprehensive sex ed.
No.
They don't support universal coverage of birth control or access to the pill.
Right.
They don't even support the distribution of a vaccine that prevents a virus, the HPV virus.
Yeah.
Unless that's like ATM machine. they don't prevent that sexually transmitted and can lead to cervical cancer.
Cervical cancer and penile and anal cancer as well. It's not just a disease that affects women. HPV is something that can cause cancer in anybody.
Oh, and throat cancer, I think, has also been implicated with the HPV virus, which makes sense because that's kind of what it does.
Yeah.
So when Governor Rick Perry, you know, the big-time pro-lifer, kind of broke ranks with the rest of the pro-life movement and had this distributed in Texas, the pro-life movement pitched a fit. Yes. They went nuts. And when he ran for president, actually backtracked. And it seemed like every single pro-life candidate was making a big deal about, oh, this is horrible, this is horrible. So let's throw this out as an open question. I really want to know what you guys think.
Okay.
If these guys care so much about abortion, why the hell are they against everything that prevents abortions?
Because they don't care about abortion. Abortion is their cover, you know? This is their little duck hide. They're squatting in and waiting for the things they really care about to fly by so they can shoot them down. What they care about, what's really at stake here for them, is the gradual decline in numbers of members of their religion. And this is what I think. I'm not a scientist, okay? I'm not like a social scientist, whatever. This is just my opinion about the situation. But I think that the need to reproduce, to have as many babies as possible in any given family, is a feature that is built into religions that long-term exist, like I said a little bit earlier. And I think it's kind of a three-pronged approach of how this happens, how this is actually built into the meme of religion. Number one, the best way to keep a woman uneducated is for her to have children young. If she's too busy raising kids, she's not going to go to school, she's not going to educate herself, she's probably not even going to have time to think too much about politics or anything like that. She's going to be too busy running around taking care of kids forever because she's going to be barefoot and pregnant for most of her life. Number two, an uneducated person is far more likely to be religious than non-religious. I think a few different studies have shown, including, I believe, Daryl Ray's, that as a person's level of education increases, their tendency to become less religious also increases. So the more uneducated a person is, the more likely they are to cling to a religion. And number three, the more religious a mother is, the more likely she is to raise her children religious. So therefore, you keep a woman uneducated, pregnant, and having babies, she's going to raise up religious babies. And that just keeps the religion going. And I think that's what these people are really afraid of, whether it's conscious or not, whether they realize this or not. This is so much a part of religion that I think these people are really fearful of a loss of their culture, a loss of their religion. And that's what they're really fighting against. It's not about abortion. It's about making more little Christians.
That seems to be the case when we're talking about Mormons, we're talking about Catholics, talking about make as many babies as you can in the short term. So, Deanna, is it just about numbers?
I think it is, but probably not consciously on the part of most people. Like Libby was saying, it's kind of a built-in feature. And I do want to make a little disclaimer here, is that there are a lot of people on the ground, people who are, you know, just your regular, average, everyday person who is pro-life because they care about the babies.
Right,
we're not
absolutely
saying that these people are engaged in some kind of crazy big conspiracy like, oh, I have to help my pastor make people have more kids so we can increase our religion.
No,
they've been, you know, been through what they're exposed to, told that this is all about killing babies and that there's an industry dedicated to killing babies for I'm not sure what reason exactly, but
for fun,
you know,
and profit, I guess.
So,
I don't know.
You know, we're not trying to blanket cover everybody, but I do think that there is at least some level of a lot of organizations, both pro-life and, you know, the more fundamentalist religious organizations, who know this somewhere in the back of their brain. It's a little, you know, part of kind of their overall strategy, is that they know that they need to encourage people to have more children to keep the church alive. Because I don't think there's a pastor or a, you know, president of some pro-life organization anywhere that doesn't know how important it is to have those numbers.
Yeah, I think there's another aspect, and I think it's a bit more insidious. And that's the attitude that these religious organizations, or religion as a whole, especially fundamentalist types of religion, have about sexuality.
Mm, yeah.
That it seems when you get to someone like, say, Rick Santorum, who, according to pollsters,
is surging from behind. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
From behind, is he's the number one choice of the pro-life voter, that these people who say, you know, abortion is my number one issue, this is what I'm voting based on, the people who find it most important, Rick Santorum with his glassy-eyed, schizophrenic shine in his eyes, is their guy. And when you ask him about why he opposes contraception, he says that, you know, that there's the dangers of contraception. And what does he see it as? He sees it as a gateway drug to promiscuity and rampant orgying.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
He seems a bit terrified by it, though.
Bring on the birth control, I say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, you're right, though. I mean, that's a serious, to be more serious here, I think you're correct about that, that there is this sort of built-in fear, which may be, you know, even kind of an installed misogyny in a lot of religion, too, that if people enjoy sexuality, it's taking them away from God or something like that. I'm not really sure precisely what the mainstream thought is on that. But there is a very anti-human sexuality bent to this as well, where people just see it as a terrible, terrible thing if a person can enjoy a free sex life without the fear of disease or pregnancy.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it right there is, you know, a lot of what's going on, you have the anti-birth control, anti-comprehensive sex ed. Yeah. Those attitudes are meant to make sex really scary. Now, if you tell kids that are getting their sex ed and it's abstinence only, you tell them that, you know, they can't ever get this HPV vaccine because it encourages promiscuity. And if they don't get it, you know, if they have any sexual contact with anybody outside the bonds of holy matrimony, they're going to develop like crazy rad warts everywhere or something. I'm not sure exactly what kind of lies. And if you do get the vaccine, Michelle Bachmann tells everybody it'll make you retarded,
yeah,
which is another bad piece of science. I mean, these are obviously scare tactics. And
sure,
if young people are so afraid of getting pregnant and getting diseases, they reason that this is going to keep them from having sex. But we know from numerous studies and including reviews of studies, you know, big, big time data that you only end up delaying someone's first sexual experience by about 6 months if you get them real hard with that abstinence only. And then when they do have sex, they're not aware of or they're even scared away from birth control methods. So they're much more likely to get sexually transmitted infections and to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And so overall, we know this. Yeah, then they got to go have an abortion. We know these things to be true, but many people are promoting absolute lies according to what we know for certain.
And the sad thing is, it's a losing battle, religion. You cannot fight biology. People are going to have sex. It's what we do.
95% of all people have extramarital or premarital sex. 95%. You scare some people into it. Yeah.
That's what I find so bizarre about all of this is that the attitude, they want to make sex scary. They want to retain these consequences. They don't want you to have an abortion, but they also don't want you to have sex. But what's more important to them than preventing the abortion? Preventing the sex.
Yeah, or if they can.
Making it so terrifying. So you want to have sex? We won't tell you about birth control, even how to use it or how to use it. We may even lie about the effectiveness of birth control.
Which they frequently do.
Another consequence of the ill-informed, abstinence-only style sex education is that the younger people end up getting pregnant or getting married either because of pregnancy or because they want to have sex and they believe they can't without marriage. One of those consequences is that it makes them more tied to a particular community such as a religion or an ultra-religious family so that they can't leave it. So it's just another way of roping people in, like scaring them away from sex and taking away a big part of their autonomy and their self-identity by curbing their sexuality. That just tends to hold them where they are and make sure and ensure that they stay in a religion or in another community.
It's certainly hard to leave a group like that, especially a really hardcore religious group that will start shunning you if you leave.
Yeah.
Especially as a single mother with a baby.
Yeah. Can you imagine if that's your only support? Geez, where are you
going to go? In many
cases,
it is, too, because a real young couple, let's say they get married at 18 or 19, they're not going to have a lot of money. So they could be sharing a house with their family, with their, you know, one of the parents. They could be sharing places with other people. And they're all so closely tied together by this religion that they, you know, you can't even, like, you know, get a different job after you lose your religious beliefs or you want to leave that situation.
And that's the funny thing. You look at the alternative to Planned Parenthood that the pro-lifers are trying to give, which is the, I'm going to guilt you out of getting an abortion. And then they put up these billboards saying, I regret my abortion. Well, yeah, when you're surrounded by these people that are trying to guilt you about it. I can, if I probably hounded you long enough with enough people, I could make you feel guilty for watching a movie, for wearing an article of clothing.
For buying a Hyundai.
That one's well-deserved.
I will never regret my Hyundai, Mike. Never.
So, I find this so mind-boggling. What is it I think at the part of it, these people are terrified of people not obeying their hardcore, narrow, fundamentalist Christian ideals and not being punished for it with consequences from time. The last thing they want is somebody to disobey their ideas and be both happy and healthy.
Yeah, and you can be happy and healthy, and kids don't realize that when they're subjected to these weird, fundamentalist-derived, abstinence-only education, in air quotes, programs. Like, we were talking about one that tells kids that their virginity is, like, of the absolute utmost importance, and that losing your virginity before marriage makes you the equivalent of, like, a Coke can that's been spit in by a bunch of people. Would you want to drink that? Or, like, a half-eaten candy bar? I mean, that's just ridiculous. Come on. And this is the message these kids are being taught. To like have all this guilt surrounding what's natural for them to do. It's so much better to give them the tools they need to make informed choices and protect themselves so that they don't end up ruining their lives or getting sucked into a religion because they get pregnant too young.
And, you know, actually, that's another factor in it is age. Now, people in modern society, even just, you know, 20 years ago, we're getting married a lot later than we ever have before. And so people are expected to be abstinent that much longer. You know, I didn't get married till I was 30.
Oh, come on. That's just not going to happen.
I wasn't going to wait. Hell no.
I think that may be all the time we have for this segment. I'm Mike Gillis. Joining me again, Deanna Joy Lyons.
Laugh with me.
And Libby Grant.
I still exist.
So we're going to take a quick break. You are listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to run to the break. It will be back in 2 minutes with a whole new group of people.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
No human is burdened with original sin, nor condemned to live in guilt, nor in need of salvation from the supernatural. I'm Eileen, Vice President of Humanists of Washington, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancement through reason, science, and democracy. Our organization opposes the use of dogma in determining laws and strongly supports marriage equality in Washington. A full range of civil rights is necessary to achieve full personal empowerment in society. Get involved at humanistsofwashington.org.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. It's been a round robin whirlwind discussion. I'm Becky, and with me for this segment is Nick. How are you doing, Nick?
Have I told you my opinions on the band Nickelback?
I think you have. And also with us is Scott. Welcome back, Scott. It's been a little while.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Yeah. Now, we at Ask an Atheist today, we're going to be coming back to our topic, the other A word. Today, we've been talking about abortion and reproductive rights. But before we get into that again, I want to give a shout out also to all of our contributors who contribute in response to Peggy's challenge. Peggy was a caller from Kent who called in and challenged all of our listeners who feel that it's important to have an atheist voice on the radio to contribute to our project. It's one of the reasons how we stay on the air. Nick, who are our contributors this week?
Our contributors this week are Aaron from Spokane, Washington, Brandon from Bozeman, Montana, Dan from the United Kingdom, Dylan from Belmont, Massachusetts, Louise from Denmark, and Jimmy from Live Oak, Florida. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And if you would like to donate to keep us on the air, you can go to askanatheist.tv. You can click donate to contribute. You can also ask us a question at askanatheist.tv. You can email questions, or you can click on the button. You may also call in today,
253-584-1480.
Thank you, Nick. Nick and Scott, I have you here today because you are regular activists for reproductive rights. Now, Nick, you're a regular on Ask an Atheist, but also you regularly go to Friday morning counter-protests at the Planned Parenthood in Olympia. Is that correct?
Yes. I am associated with a group called Olympia Loves Planned Parenthood. We meet every Friday morning in front of the Planned Parenthood in Olympia, which is downtown. It's at 5th and Legion, I believe.
And Scott, you are an activist. You have been for quite some time now. You are a past president of Aradia Women's Health Center.
Yes, back in 2006, I was its last president.
And you're also a volunteer with a couple organizations, right?
Yes, I do volunteer with NARAL Pro-Choice Washington and Cedar River Clinics, and I also volunteer for Planned Parenthood.
Now, tell us a little bit about your pro-rights activism. I mean, how did this start? How did you get started,
well,
Scott?
I was raised pro-choice. My mother and father were both pro-choice, but it wasn't until 1985, I think, when I attended my first pro-choice rally. Actually, it was an anti-choice rally on Roe v. Wade Day in Olympia. And
so there were protesters there were opponents of abortion?
Yes.
Okay.
And they basically, it was their protest, and I came to counter-protest. And a couple of them were out of control, and one guy actually attempted to stab me. And that was my initiation into peaceful demonstrations in Olympia.
Wow. And now, were these abortion opponents, were they religious in nature?
Yes. These were people that were bussed in pretty much from Catholic churches. It was mostly the Knights of Columbus and Catholic churches from all over Washington State.
And did they call themselves pro-life?
Yes.
yet they still deign to attempt to stab you.
Well, I wouldn't blame it on everyone. There's always a few zealots in a crowd, and we there were some there.
Wow. Now, Nick, in your experience, do you ever experience or encounter religious protesters?
Oh, yeah. Most of the people that protest in front of Planned Parenthood, the people that I'm counter-protesting, most of them are from various Catholic churches around the area. A lot of it is spearheaded by a man named Ed Solly. His organization, I believe, is called Olympia Pro-Life, and they have a big truck with, you know, a picture of a cute little baby on it, and, you know, it's like, would you really want to kill me, and stuff like that, and it's...
Needless
yeah,
to say,
it's,
now, Nick, you wouldn't actually really want to kill the cute little baby.
No, of course.
All right.
No one does.
Good. Now, To either of you, you are both atheists. Does your atheism motivate you to be an activist for reproductive rights, Nick?
About as much as it made my decision in buying my car.
So that is to say, not much.
No, not really. They're okay. Independent of each other.
And Scott,
I would say the same thing. I was pro-choice long before I actually became an atheist. I was pretty much a skeptic or an agnostic most of my life. I only decided that I was in fact atheist a couple of years ago.
So, is your position as an agnostic, as a skeptic, does that influence your decision to be an activist for reproductive rights?
I think it reinforces it, because I can't help but see the injustices that are done in the name of religion to try to take away civil liberties away from women, gay and lesbian rights. I mean, all of this hatred stems from religion. It has one starting point.
Now, Scott, you mentioned the folks who are abortion opponents are also generally associated with wanting to take away gay and lesbian rights. Nick, I think you had been telling me at one point one of the particularly active protesters at Planned Parenthood who's opponent of abortion. He also does some
yes.
stuff that you did.
Yeah, I saw a picture of this guy, and he has this really big neck beard. And he's younger than a lot of the protesters, so we call him Youngbeard. I saw a picture of Youngbeard protesting on the UW campus, holding up this giant anti-gay sign. It was very, very offensive.
So not
and
only
it was vile. It really was.
So not only does he not want abortions to happen, but he also protests the existence of gay people.
Oh yeah, he's just your typical religious zealot.
So in the majority of protesters of anti-reproductive rights activists that you encounter. They are not just limited to this particular issue, but really a lot of religious issues?
I can't really say on most of the protesters. I can say on this guy that it's definitely the case with him. Most of the other people, I haven't seen them protest anything else.
Has there ever been any kind of, you know, particular rich instances of religious fervor that was being used?
Oh, again, with Youngbeard, he likes to spout Bible verses at me. And so the way that I counter it...
That's really surprising to me, actually, because, I mean, I'm pretty knowledgeable about the Hebrew scriptures, if I can interject here. And... You know, the Hebrew Bible says very, very little about any kind of abortions. It says, basically, if a miscarriage happens because of an accident, then the person who caused the injury to the woman is responsible for, essentially,
you know,
a fine.
The Bible also says very little about airplanes, too.
Okay.
So, but whenever anyone starts to, like, use the Jesus argument, like, on me, an atheist...
What is the Jesus argument against abortion?
It's really nebulous, and it always changes. They basically just spout random Bible verses, but I return the favor by shouting Bad Religion lyrics.
Of the group, Bad
yes,
Religion. Okay.
Yes, of the band.
And like, do they appreciate that?
I don't think they know quite what it is, but some of the pro-choicers are Bad Religion fans, so they would understand it, and they kind of have a chuckle.
Okay, all right. Scott, have you ever run into any kind of, you know, particularly religious fervor at any of these rallies, besides, of course, being... assaulted?
Well, I don't think you can separate the two. I think on a personal level, it does eventually boil down to some religious value. It might not be a specific religious value, but a personal value that is what you would call a first value, something that's non-negotiable. Abortion is one of those. Gay and lesbian rights are another one. And it crosses the spectrum of nearly all religions.
Now, you are both atheists. Do you ever let on as you're being there as an abortion rights activist? Do you ever, you know, talk with any of the protesters or counter protesters or observers about the fact that you're an atheist?
Sometimes, if I don't try and bring it up as a central part of conversation, but sometimes it does come out. Like if they, if someone,
like if they're shouting Bible verses.
Yeah, and I will at first say, you know, I thank you, but I'm an atheist. And sometimes some of the less vocal protesters will say, oh, that's okay, you know, we're not here to, you know, proselytize, we're here to voice our opinion, and that's okay. But occasionally there'll be those people who will just make it their life's mission to tear you down because of your atheism. And actually, most of the people on my side are vocal atheists, so.
Okay. Do you ever have any religious folks that, you know, that unite with you in favor of reproductive rights and keeping abortion legal,
I'm
like
sure
keeping Planned Parenthood open?
I'm sure that there are some, but they aren't nearly as vocal about their religion as the opponents are.
Now, you protest outside, or you counter-protest outside of Planned Parenthood, and I think, Nick, one of the things that you had pointed out to me outside of the show hour was that Planned Parenthood only has 90%, 97% of their services?
97% of what they do has nothing to do with abortion. So, essentially, protesting Planned Parenthood because you don't like abortion, it's like a vegan protesting the grocery store because they sell meat and milk.
Oh, dear. I think grocery stores might sell more than 3% milk and meat, so actually
exactly,
a vegan might have more grounds to protest
the grocery. But you don't see vegans protesting the grocery store.
Okay, all right. So one of the things that's come up lately in sort of our discourse that some of our other hosts and guests have talked about is sort of the legislation surrounding these really restrictive laws about access to reproductive rights and healthcare and things like that. And one of the things I wanted to run by you guys is Michigan Representative Lisa Brown. She gave testimony on the floor, or she spoke on the floor of the Michigan State Legislature. And the following day, she was silenced. She was barred from speaking, ostensibly because of a lack. She contributed to a lack of decorum. And are you guys familiar with this story?
I read about this a little while ago.
You know, and she had come forth and she had said, part of what she had said was that she had said the word vagina on
Shocker!
The floor of the state legislature.
Oh, my God.
And apparently that contributes to a lack of decorum in Michigan.
And apparently so does the, you know, word ear or foot.
I don't know.
Or any other body part.
Are body parts off limits now?
Yes, of course they are. They are extremely offensive.
Well, and our legislators have to have their time acting as church elders when they're in session.
I see. You know, you said church elders. One of the things that really struck me about this is that there's a lot of anger saying that, you know, she should have been able to not have been silenced, that she was using anatomically correct, you know, terminology, biological terminology. These laws are about biology, about medicine. The bills themselves mention women's body parts. And what actually struck me when I heard her testimony, and when I sort of read between the lines, was that part of her argument also was that that these restrictive laws were actually infringing on religious freedom, as opposed to establishing religious freedom. She says there's been a lot of talk about, you know, religious freedom, and that if you allow abortions, then this is, you know, stepping on my toes and my religious freedom. Are you familiar with her religious background?
I am not familiar with her religious background particularly.
So
I didn't read too far into that.
Representative Lisa Brown is Jewish, and she says that under Jewish law, the life of the mother is paramount, and that in cases where the life of the mother or the life of a pregnant woman is at all in danger,
you have to get an abortion.
It is not only encouraged and it is not only permitted, but it is mandated that you stop a pregnancy in order to preserve
the woman's
life.
I did not know that.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And so restricting abortion, in effect, is stamping out her religious freedom in this case. And what really struck me as this is not about women versus men. This is about religious conservatism and Christian in particular, because there was another legislator that said, no, she was completely unprofessional and contributed to the lack of decorum because she went to her religion.
I think the lack of decorum is just an excuse, a red herring for the Republicans to go back to the old thing of we can't talk about sex, we can't encourage it, we can't have...
I would say I would say religiously motivated Republicans
yes.
in this case that particularly want to establish their... their religious views about reproductive rights and sexuality as the norm. I think that it's really about that.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I just think that it was a complete debacle, and you do yourself no favors by saying, you know, by claiming that someone talking about her own personal faith and naming body parts that are being legislated is unprofessional in any way.
I'll be sure to remember that and bring that up to this guy when he decides to use his religion to, you know, talk politics.
And in fact, you know, Representative Brown, from her testimony, she says, and I love this line, she says, "I have not asked you to adopt and adhere to my religious beliefs. Why are you asking me to adopt yours?"
Exactly.
And I think we as atheists can say, you know, "I have not asked you to adopt and adhere to our non-religious beliefs or our lack of religious beliefs. So don't ask me to adopt yours."
It's a double standard.
Yes, yes. So we've got one more email on this subject, and this comes to us from Doug from Wichita. Nick, would you do the honors?
All right. His email says, "You asked for a secular reason why abortion should be banned. Here it is. Oklahoma food tastes awful. Oklahoma is moving to ban aborted human fetuses in food. Therefore, banning abortion is needed to make Oklahoma food taste better."
What? Thank you, Doug, for your tongue-in-cheek argument, the non-religious argument for for keeping abortion legal. Clearly, he's playing on the trope that atheists like to eat babies.
And the email goes on. It says, "Seriously, though, the times I've volunteered at the local abortion clinic before a quote-unquote pro-lifer killed our doctor for Jesus, the only secular reason an anti gave for his," and I assume he means anti-choice, "gave for wanting abortion banned is because he needed more children to pay for his Social Security."
Wowie. You know, this, it's it, not only, you know, what Libby and Deanna said in our last half hour, you know, that you want more religious people to fill out your ranks and swell your ranks within your religion, but apparently it's also an economic reason, too.
Yeah.
Multiply, be fruitful.
I think that's the only good reason I have heard for the Quiverful movement. But, you know, even then, that's small. You know, very, very small versus like a giant mound of not good.
Be fruitful, multiply, and pay for me in my old age.
Yes.
There you go.
I don't know. I think we got lots of babies here. So
we have enough. I don't want to have any kids before I'm 30 myself.
We do, yeah. So any other closing thoughts about, you know, any other particular experiences in your travels as pro-choice activists?
I have one. Most of my signs that I carry in front of Planned Parenthood don't have anything to do with abortion. But there is one that says birth control prevents abortion. And one of the nice old ladies who I'm sure is dragged there by her husband, she looked at my sign and said, "You know, I actually agree with that because I'm not Catholic like the rest of these people, and I support the use of abortion of birth control." That was a bit of a Freudian slip right there.
The I keep bumping into this one woman at the anti-abortion demonstration. She's always wearing a shirt or carrying a sign that says, "I regret my abortion." And I wish she would just get over it. She likes to engage with the... She starts off with, you know, "My son would now be a 37 or, what, 44-year-old engineer by now." It's time to get past it and move on. And she made a choice, and she now wishes to deny that choice to others.
Yeah. You, "Hello, it's me. I'm back."
Hey, Sam. Hey, Sam.
Yeah, you hope that he would have been an engineer. Some places where I grew up, you might not be so lucky. So this is not the last time we're going to be talking about this. Our hat is now in the proverbial ring, just like it was for gay marriage. If you want to talk to us about this, if you want to disagree with anything we said, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red button and leave us a comment, or give us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. And that's about the time we have. So I have an enormous cast list. My name is Sam Olvey. My hosts today with me were Mike Gillis and Becky Friedman. In our first segment, we had Eileen Cavallo and Bob Seidensticker. In the second segment, we had Libby Grant and Deanna Joy Lyons. And in the third segment, we had Nick Kennedy and Scott Leopold. My music, as usual, is by Chris Cullman. My production assistant is Rich Lyons. Post-show is at Doyle's at 5 o'clock. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can email us at questions at askanatheist.tv or voicemail us at 206-420-0997. See you guys next week.
KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma.
With IRN, you...